Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Brian Cameron, founding president of FEPO, the Federation of Enterprise Architecture Professional Organizations, and Nick Malik, principal Microsoft Enterprise Architect. So, Brian, Nick, thank you for sharing your deep experiences with our audience.
Great to be here, thanks, Stephen. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely terrific to be here.
Okay, so we got two people here on the call, and I'm going to ask Brian first the next question. So starting with Brian, and then Nick can follow up. Brian, can you provide an update of your latest activities and the value of those activities to the industry and to EA professionals?
Sure, Stephen. We've had a number of things going on at Penn State through our Center for Enterprise Architecture and through the FEPO organization. So why don't I start with some of the activities of FEPO. This organization is coming together nicely. We have 17 professional organizations now within the FEPO membership from all over the globe. We're taking major steps to professionalize the discipline of enterprise architecture, starting with some of the initiatives that we'll talk about in this interview. And we've got a great roadmap of activities planned for 2014 and beyond. So I'm very optimistic that this group is going to really make a dramatic impact on the profession. And then within our Center for Enterprise Architecture at Penn State, our new master's program in enterprise architecture is going extremely well. Our center continues to grow and expand, and we're very optimistic about the future of enterprise architecture and the different initiatives that we have underway.
Yeah, thank you, Stephen. This is Nick. I want to join in a little bit on what Brian was saying and say that, you know, we've been very busy, and specifically in FEPO, to develop content and ideas and try to find consensus among all the various different organizations, about 20 organizations that are in FEPO. And that's a real challenge, but it's also a major step forward because we're in the process of actually building something that hasn't been built before, which is something of a consensus, an industry-wide consensus around some of what these ideas are and what they mean. It's the very first time that we've actually had anything like that in the business of enterprise architecture.
Now, Nick, you recently completed work on an EA paper. Can you describe the reasons for creating the paper and why it is so important?
Yes, thank you. I would say that it evolved. The history of the paper, it was kind of a checkered one. We started almost 2 years ago when I'm one of the editors in Wikipedia, and I watch over a couple of pages around software and software architecture and enterprise architecture and business architecture, etc. And a particular fellow who I knew from LinkedIn had gone onto the enterprise architecture page and essentially deleted every single word of content and rewritten it with the viewpoint that the federal EA architecture is the only one. And I had to unroll all of his edits. And I take that very seriously. I don't do that very lightly. And so I went onto LinkedIn and started a discussion what should be there. I didn't want it to just be my word. It turned into a 3,000 entry thread. There was a lot of discussion about what should be on Wikipedia. And the real problem then is there wasn't a single source or any really good notable source of information that I could point to and said, here's a consensus. Here's a single person who said something that everybody kind of agrees with. Here's a well-formed statement that the industry has bought into. I had no evidence that anyone had bought into anything. So I couldn't go back to Wikipedia and say, this is the right answer. I could only say, this is what we're currently doing, and everyone's editing it and rewriting it as we go. That wasn't a very good position to stand on. So I got involved with FEPO through the Center for EA Advancement, and I proposed that why don't we do this through FEPO? Why don't we have all the organizations help write a paper, and then if they all sign on to it and ratify it in some way, you know, just indicate that they agree with it, then we'll have something notable, something that is an industry consensus. And then, honestly, my original motivation, I'd go back to Wikipedia and say, you know, the industry actually has spoken, and here's what they say, and we'll have something that's a basis for that page. I know it sounds kind of silly, but motivations come from interesting places. It's evolved, and I still have that as an objective, but I'm definitely very thrilled that we've been able to move toward a consensus. We've gotten all these different organizations to sign up and say, yes, this is a good description of enterprise architecture that we agree with. And that's been just earth-shatteringly different than I had originally expected it to be.
Now, Brian, do you have anything to add? And in addition to that, then, can you also overview the highlights in the paper?
Sure. As Nick mentioned, up until this point in time, and I think both of us will use the word consensus a lot, because that's really what FIPO is all about. And coming from my perspective at Penn State, I can't tell you how many people have told me when they Google enterprise architecture, they leave more confused than when they started, because there's so many different perspectives and definitions out there. And up until this point in time, it's been either an individual or an individual organization that comes out with their definition of enterprise architecture. And then typically the other organizations or other individuals then take shots at that definition. This is the first time we've had almost 20 professional organizations come together to ratify something like this. And I think, frankly, that's going to be a little harder to discount. This is a very open group. So if you don't agree with something that's in the first edition of the paper, we invite anyone and everyone to get involved in the discussion as we continue to evolve the paper. Then as far as the major components of the paper, we talk about what is enterprise architecture, and we're talking holistically, not just enterprise IT architecture. We're talking enterprise architecture from a holistic enterprise-wide view. And what value does it bring to the organization? And that's the major focus of the paper. What is it, and why should we care? What value does this bring to the organization? And it's written for the general public or the layperson. And we've vetted this by a number of people outside of the profession. That's another thing we found as we went through this exercise, that most, if not all, of the current definitional documents that are out there were developed by EAs and vetted by other EAs. So while it may have, these documents may have made sense to people in the profession, once people outside of the profession read them, oftentimes they left as confused or more confused than when they started. So we tried not to make that same mistake with this document. And we had people from outside of the field read it and vet it and verify that, yes, this in fact makes sense. And we finally get what enterprise architecture is and what it can do for our organizations.
So, Nick, can you provide your comments in terms of the highlights of the paper?
Yeah, highlights, let me kind of come back to where Brian had mentioned. We sort of discussed, what is enterprise architecture? And it's not so much a definition, because definitions are intended to be, references used in dictionaries. It's more of a description, because we're really writing it for the layperson. We're not trying to be 100% perfect. We're trying to be understanding. We're going for clarity, not completeness. And what the result of that initial, approach is that we actually have text that people understand. As Brian noted, and Brian and the Center for EA over at Penn State did a fantastic job working with us to vet some of these ideas, to run them past people who have not seen enterprise architecture in any real sense, or maybe have heard a vague notion of it, right? And so we've got highlights around what it is from a descriptive standpoint, how it compares with a metaphor, and the metaphor we landed on, we tried a number of different metaphors out. We did land on the urban planner metaphor because it simply made more sense to folks who were outside the profession. We tried a number of different metaphors, and this one people kind of, attached to. And be that as it may, I prefer to go with something that people are happy with. We kind of described the a way that enterprise architecture is used. It's used in situations of ongoing change and transformational change, and we made the distinction between those two. And then we talk about what differentiates enterprise architecture practices from other functions and practices within an organization, so that you can kind of understand, enterprise is this and not that. That's real helpful for folks who are trying to figure out in their head, what does this really and how is it different? I've been involved in so many discussions about what enterprise architecture is, and about a third of the questions is, but isn't that the same as that? And so we try to make that a little more clear. It's not a long paper. It's actually quite short. One of the key challenges of consensus is if you say too much, it's harder to get people to agree. It's sufficient length to have a good good solid conversation and a good place to start when you're working with a stakeholder who looks at you and says, do you want to do this enterprise what? And then you can answer the question, and I think it really helps.
So, Brian, how will the paper evolve in the future?
Well, this is very much a living document. This is the first of hopefully many editions. We have a new publications working group that's being formed within the FIPO organization to evolve this paper and come out with the next edition at some point in the future. In addition to evolving and producing a number of other FIPO-related papers and publications. So as we said, we've been very clear throughout this process. This is not, perfect by any means. It's the first edition of probably several different editions. So, it's not, and the perspective I've used with everybody in the group, perfection is not possible. We're not striving for perfection. We're striving for something everybody can live with and feel okay about and ratify. And that's what we have. And I'm very proud of the first edition and proud of the process and the respectful nature of the discussion that we've had throughout this process.
Now, this question is from a practical aspect or perspective, and that is, and first of all, I'll ask you, Brian, how should the paper be used? And you come from an academic background, but you also work with industry. And then, of course, Nick is one of the principal architects within Microsoft. How does he see being used within an organization like a Microsoft?
Well, and this is an interesting question because this is one of the first things we had to do with our group is level set who is the audience and what is the intent of the paper. And as you can expect with a group this large, we had different perspectives on who the audience should be and different objectives for this paper. In the end, we all agreed that this was to be for the general public, for the layperson, something that, and for me in particular, something I could take to, say, my dean or anybody else in my community, either the industry folks outside of IT and EA or other academics, and give them this document, have it stand alone, and they say, okay, I get it. I get what you guys do. I get why this is valuable. I get why I should care. And that, I think that's the general consensus and the general set of objectives that most in our organization have for this paper.
And I'll jump in from a practitioner standpoint. As you noted, Stephen, I'm a enterprise strategy architect within Microsoft. I spent 9 years just being a architect in service of Microsoft, the corporation itself, and now I'm a consultant. And in both roles, there's an essential need that happens, especially fairly early on when you're storming, forming, and norming, as people like to say, of enterprise architecture practices within an organization. And that essential need is explaining to your potential or hopeful or future stakeholders why you need to be there. They've got processes, they've got an approach that they've been using for years, and they don't know it's broken, and they don't know how it's broken or why it's broken or even if it's broken. Many feel that, you know, it's a change, to change away from the way they've always done things to a new way. And it's a change especially for departments like IT and finance that are supporting organizations within corporations and federal agencies, et cetera, because their world will actually change just a little bit more. They're going to have to cooperate with this new function and understand how it fits. So you have to be able to explain it. And I cannot count the time where somebody has either discussed it or opened up a discussion or asked me personally, how did you explain this? Because we're having a real hard time. And the idea of the paper is to form a nugget. It's not everything, but it's something. It's a place to start that a lot of people agree upon. We've all been very focused on how would you explain enterprise architecture, both for the people who have never heard of it and may collaborate with it, and for people who've never heard of it and probably won't collaborate with it. But it needs to be a simple and consistent approach. So the way I would use it is, for one thing, I'm, you know, and literally in the process of boiling it down into a PowerPoint presentation that I can present to my other enterprise architects within Microsoft, so that they'll be able to use it to discuss what is enterprise architecture, even with our rather large client base, and just say, you know, there's this thing called enterprise architecture out there. And it'll really help to to just share that idea.
And then as a follow-up, Nick, can you profile the work on the EA body of knowledge? And then after, Nick, you provide your comments that Brian can chime in with his thoughts.
Sure. So the Enterprise Architecture body of knowledge, a number of different people have commented over the years that we didn't have the same type of approach to an enterprise architecture body of knowledge that other fields have started doing, especially after PMBOK, the project management body of knowledge, kind of became a de facto approach. And there's been a number of attempts. So the most notable thing to start with is about 2003, the MITRE Corporation, which is a federally funded organization, kind of a private branch of the U.S. government. They built a document and called it EABOK and published it and shared it with the world. But they didn't maintain it, and there wasn't kind of a body of people behind it representing the industry. It was all from MITRE standpoint. It wasn't a bad document. It was actually pretty good, for especially for its time. But then it kind of got stale pretty quickly and didn't have very much in there about business architecture. So people weren't really using it as an EABOK. We managed to reawaken the EABOK. Directly, you know, we collaborated with MITRE. MITRE is a very interesting organization, and they're very interested in building that collaboration. They don't want to own all the knowledge. They want to be, you know, a part of the community that grows the EABOK. And we've been very fortunate. They've been very, very collaborative. It takes a little time when working things out with an organization that's not used to being open and public, because they're very used to being secret. But we've been rather successful. I think we've got a board of directors that's a mix of people across industry and government and academia, and we've got a structure and an approach, and we're collecting content as we speak. And I think we're on the way toward putting together what might be what I'm hoping will be the industry base for an enterprise architecture body of knowledge.
Yeah, I think Nick covered the EABOK initiative well. Nick and I are both on the governance body for the EABOK. There is going to be a community kind of unveiling, a community input session on the EABOK held at the MITRE offices this coming March. So anybody that's interested, please, you know, Google the EABOK website, and I'm sure there'll be information coming shortly on this upcoming community meeting.
Now, Brian, can you profile work on the Careers Path paper in terms of what you see, sort of the purpose of it, is the objectives, the audience, the intended audience, the value that it's going to bring, and then if Nick can follow up with his comments?
Sure. This is actually going to be a major part of our discussion at the next FIPO meeting that we're conducting next week in Los Angeles. The Career Path Initiative, it'll be multiple stages to this initiative. The genesis of the initiative came over the last few years as FIPO and as the Center for Enterprise Architecture at Penn State and all of our various constituents have been hearing more and more of a call for more formalized career paths in different areas related to enterprise architecture. Right now, there is no formal career path or consistent role descriptions, et cetera. And most organizations, large organizations, out of necessity, have developed their own internal career paths, usually linked around some type of internal certification. But the issue we have is that you really can't compare a bronze level architect from Cisco to a level 3 architect from Raytheon. And there's been many cases where an architect of one organization is not qualified to hold a similar position in another. So we really need to get past all of this, and there's good reasons why, for lack of any industry guidance, why these different individual career paths have sprung up. But in order to really advance enterprise architecture into the stature of, quote, a real profession on par with established professions like accounting, engineering, et cetera, we've really got to get past all of this fragmentation and differing career paths and come up with some common guidance for the profession as a whole. So the first step, we have a new career path working group within FIPO that over the next 6 months to a year is going to be helping to define, the core structure. So we're trying to define the core career path that seems to apply to most organizations out there, realizing there's specialty architects and there's many things around the fringes that we're not going to address in this first initiative. But what's the core career path look like for this profession? What are the different branches? And then after the framework or the structure is agreed upon, then what are the related roles and competency descriptions around the different positions that fall under the different branches and hierarchy of this profession? This will serve in the long run as a framework for securing the FIPO endorsement. So, and what I mean by that, once this career path structure is developed and the related roles and competencies are developed and ratified by the FIPO members, in the future, one of the goals of FIPO is almost to become the accrediting body or the underwriter's laboratory for enterprise architecture for people in the United States, or outside of the United States, rather. I should explain what the underwriter's laboratory is. It's an organization in the U.S. that validates quality standards for consumer products. So if you see the UL symbol on something, you know that it's been through a certain amount of rigorous testing and it meets certain quality standards. And we really don't have anything like that for this field. So as a result, you see a proliferation of certifications worldwide, many fly-by-night certifications. You know, right now anybody can hang out a shingle and offer a certification. And there's no group out there to say whether that certification is good, bad, or somewhere in the middle. So over time, the idea is that groups would bring their certifications and other artifacts and documents related to the profession to FIPO. The FIPO organization would then vet that certification. So if Organization X says that their certification maps to this part of the career path structure, the FIPO members would verify that it does in fact map to that part of the career path structure, and it does do what it says it's supposed to do, and it is of reasonable quality, et cetera. And then after that vetting process, there'll be a vote. If the vote's positive, then that organization receives the FIPO endorsement. And hopefully over time, that FIPO endorsement will mean something to the profession. It will mean that a certification or some other work has been reviewed and vetted by these 20-odd professional organizations from around the globe, and that they've voted to give this certification or other work the FIPO endorsement. And hopefully over time, if we're successful with this initiative, the FIPO endorsement will mean something to the profession.
Let me chime in a little bit on Brian's excellent description. This is Nick. I want to highlight the difficulty of working without one. Microsoft has this problem too. We've hired hundreds of enterprise architects to work in our consulting division, and they hold the title of enterprise architect at Microsoft. The challenge was, you know, how do we know if somebody, when they're hiring them, if they're really an enterprise architect? And we had a large number of people in the company who said, "Oh, you're opening a division, you're going to give people a title of enterprise architect. We want in." And we had to filter for ourselves. We had to figure out what does it mean to be an enterprise architect, and that took a huge amount of time. It delayed the launch of the program. It made a very challenging set of discussions around those individuals who were close but weren't really ready to be an enterprise architect. How do you tell somebody, "Oh, you think you're an EA, ha, ha, ha"? It's really important to be able to say, there is a goal here, there's a path here, and you can achieve it. And it's much more of a comfortable conversation when they've already seen what that path looks like. And so we had to do that internally, and it was a very difficult process, and one that I'm hoping that we can help other companies avoid the difficulty. And also, you know, when we send a Microsoft Enterprise Architect to work with a client, we want the client to know this person really is an enterprise architect. They're not just some schmuck. And that's not to put down any other fields, but that's to point out that if we establish the name and what it means, it helps to build that credibility. Credibility is so important in this field. So, you know, the work that FIPO and the center are doing to help foster this notion of what actually is an enterprise architect in terms of training, capabilities, skills, I'll leave the wordsmithing to the people who are going to be on that committee, is really important for organizations that are in both the situation of setting up an enterprise architecture program and having to hire an architect, and in consulting organizations that actually want to be able to say, "I have an enterprise architect to present to you." It's wildly valuable.
So Brian and Nick, you know, we've spent quite a few minutes now talking about this EA paper and the careers path area. So there's the EA BOG. Where can the audience go to get information or get the copies of these papers and to use them in their practice or also in their organizations?
FIPO, all the information's available on the FIPO website. We're getting ready to launch a new version of the website as well. But if you go to www.feapo.org, you'll see links to all of the material we've talked about and other things as well.
Just to chime into that, the EA box is at eabok.org.
Okay, so that's really useful to know. Now, Nick, what are the major milestones for EA, do you feel, in 2014?
Oh, that's a tough one. You know, enterprise architects are wonderful at projecting roadmaps for the way the world could evolve, but then, you know, reality always comes along and says, but that's great, now here's what's actually going to happen. I think the milestones that we have predicted is making progress against some additional facets of this discussion. When we opened the discussion about this this paper, we were calling it the Perspectives paper. You know, we collected information from each of the various different FIPO members, and our first attempt to pull it all together ended up with a document that was somewhere 30 pages long after I had removed duplication, before duplication is somewhere closer to 70 pages long. Clearly, we weren't going to put out a 70-page paper. And so there was a lot of discussion and facets that we did not cover in our paper. And I think one of the key challenges is to kind of storm around what is the next big thing that we want to address and go ahead and get some progress against that. I'd love to see another paper come out in 2014. I'm not sure if it's possible. We'll have to see how ready the various people organizations are to collaborate with that. That's from my standpoint. Brian, what do you think?
I think this is kind of an ongoing set of milestones and that we're all working towards, and it's the continued evolution and professionalization of enterprise architecture in general. I think that the paper and the career path are obviously steps towards that goal. But I see EA in 2014 hopefully making some greater advances towards broader understanding, broader acceptance, and greater professionalism as a whole.
Now, as a follow-on, Brian, what do you see as the major milestones for FIPO in 2014 and 15, and how will this impact business and industry, the profession, and working professionals?
From my perspective, as the president of FIPO, I think if we successfully develop this career path initiative, which we have underway, and we get to the point in sometime in late 2014, 2015, where we're ready to become this accrediting body, where we've got the career path structure and the competencies and roles agreed upon and ratified, and we have vetted a few certifications, we're starting to award the FIPO endorsement, and more importantly, that organizations are seeking out the FIPO endorsement, that we've attained the status of this accrediting body for the profession. If we can get to that point in the next 2 to 3 years, then I think we've accomplished quite a bit as an organization and quite a bit for the profession as a whole.
Now, there's companies out there, right, who are going to be listening to this interview, and there's also working professionals out there, you know, and they'll say, well, that looks interesting, but, you know, the FIPO is this sort of other organization. How do they get involved?
Great question. Next week, we're going to be ratifying additional membership levels. I've actually been getting quite a few inquiries about membership to FIPO. Currently, the only way to get involved with FIPO, so FIPO is an organization of organizations. We're kind of like, I always equate us to the United Nations for this space. So the only way currently to get involved is to come in through one of the member organizations. And many people do it this way. So they come in through one of the member organizations that they're associated with and get involved in FIPO initiatives. However, early in 2014, we're going to be launching additional membership levels for non-professional organizations. So these would be non-voting levels for corporations, government entities, universities. Even though I'm the president of FIPO, I do not vote. I do not represent a professional organization, so I do not have a vote in the different initiatives and decisions of the organization. So these affiliate memberships will again be organization based. So companies can join, organizations can join, not individuals. It's an organizational level memberships, but we'll have some additional options available for interested organizations in early 2014.
Now, Nick, you're a working professional. You're working with one of the largest corporations in the world, and that's Microsoft, and you also are interacting with a lot of other businesses out there through your, just because of your stature in the enterprise architecture space. So, Nick, can you comment on, in your business roles, if you can describe some major EA challenges that you're facing and your solutions to those challenges, that would be sort of as best practices and a value to businesses out there?
So I'll do that at a very high level out of respect for time. But I think one of the biggest challenges, first off, in any enterprise architecture program, you have to understand the scope of where enterprise architecture could actually play in that organization. Organizations don't adopt EA suddenly with any kind of a positive effect. You really need to adopt it over time, and it's a growth process. And the challenges are going to be based upon that scope to a certain extent. Organizations typically start in an IT space where it's not really enterprise architecture, but more enterprise IT architecture, where they're trying to understand how to remove the segmentation in their IT space caused by the natural segmentation of their organization. What I think is the bigger challenge, and the one that impacts myself the most and my peers, is that at some level, the dysfunctions within an organization become the dysfunctions within IT, and you can't address them at the IT level. You can't repair this problem by stitching things together in IT systems. You really need to repair the problem by asking your business organizing people, the people who really kind of figure out what the structure of the business, whether it's an official organizational development role or whether it's more of an executive decision-making role. You need to ask those folks to be thinking about some key problems. And the key problems are, you know, what rationale did you use to create the structure of the organization? And if you did use rationale, can we explain it to everybody else? Because it helps to make decisions. It helps to allocate accountabilities. It helps to build ownership of information, which are really key problems that ripple throughout an organization's effectiveness. So from an enterprise architecture standpoint, I'd say that asking people to consider making even fairly small changes to the allocation of duties, responsibilities, trust, structure of an organization is something to be done very carefully. So those are really the challenges that we face in enterprise architecture. Is how do you position that it's necessary to even ask the question? How do you ask the questions? How do you get the responses that say, well, do you have a better idea? And because that's the most immediate response. And to be able to answer that with, why, yes. Here's some ideas for rationale for how you might construct the architecture of your organization and have the credibility and the science behind what you're saying be compelling enough for a business person to respond with, then let's try that.
So this question now is for you, Brian, in that I know that you've been doing a lot of traveling in throughout Europe and Asia, South America, and throughout the U.S., and it's all about consulting. You've been providing your expertise on enterprise architecture. What do you find are sort of the top best practices or lessons that you're sharing with your clients in your formal consulting role?
Well, I think there are several. At a high level, never assume you have all the answers. This gets back to the word consensus that we've been using over and over again. We have a leadership course in our professional master's program in enterprise architecture. We bring in different speakers talking about leadership, and there's a consistent theme that you hear with all of these presentations. And that theme is that leadership in enterprise architecture is particularly challenged. And I think one of the reasons it's challenged is because of how many people came into enterprise architecture, where they grew up, which is typically in the IT or engineering space in many cases. And many, many people coming from that space have, you know, very much a type A personality where it's more important to be right than to build consensus. And I think that's one thing that, we've got to change. We need, in some cases, a new generation of leaders that can build consensus, can lead their EA practices from their IT roots to really be true enterprise-wide architecture and interface with effectively with different parts of the organization. And that's one of the greatest challenges I hear from organizations of all types all over the globe. And I think going with that, being able to put yourself in the position of the other person and trying to find that consensus and that win-win in the discussion. And I think that type of empathy is very important for a successful enterprise architect. So many of these are interpersonal qualities and not depth and technical skills that I see as, you know, some of the big challenges and some of the things that when we start having discussions with these different groups, it comes back to many of these interpersonal and leadership and organizational issues time and time again. And I think going with this theme, don't get married to a position or a single point of view, because I think oftentimes people in this field get set on what they feel is the right answer. And I think you have to be open to, you know, listening to all the different points of view and modifying your views accordingly as new information comes in, and not get so entrenched in a position that you can't see other points of view or see other possible directions.
Now, in the marketplace, you know, we hear about things like big data, you know, mobile being the top priority in all decision making, the increasing use of automation like robotics, driverless cars, and you know, these kinds of things. From your perspective, Nick, and then followed by Brian, what do you see as some disruptive innovations that isn't a topic of discussion right now, that maybe people aren't considering yet, but you feel will be something that has to be considered because it's going to affect the enterprise?
I do think there's a number of innovations that are coming, and we have to recognize that there's some very big trends on the horizon, things that are changing. Globalization has provided the ability for capital to move very, very freely around the world. And I think we've seen a massive reintegration of the way manufacturing works. And the way for some, not many, but some service industries have also seen some of this, especially with the outsourcing of call center work. Well, I think we're likely to see a very different approach to information as well. Today, information companies, companies that provide you with an information service, are very, very new and they're very young, and they're still following a much more traditional one company does it all model. And I think what we're likely to see, a very disruptive set of innovations are going to arise, but it's going to arise because suddenly a whole bunch of large players can connect in ways that they had not been able to do so before. Don't know when that sudden thing will happen. But when it does, what we're going to see is an array of services that compete with one another and are interchangeable, allowing a company internally to literally toss large portions of their IT, you know, their specialized, unique little application layers that are all sitting within some of these very large organizations, and replace them with services offered by third parties in a reliable manner. Right now, it's catch as catch can. The best services that are available are all very platform as a service and infrastructure as a service level type things, where you can just go get a bunch of servers, but you can't really go get your new financial system. You can't really go get your CRM system in a way that is all integrated with your platform, right? You can do that as a standalone. And so I think I'm waiting for the innovation to occur. I'm helping in my little piece of it, but I don't know exactly how it's going to evolve. I think we need a very dynamic leader to pull it together. But once it does emerge, it will reshape the way information flows, within companies, between companies, and around a company. And I think that's going to change very much the nature of what the professionals in the information management, information technology space are doing for a living. And it's going to be fairly disruptive. On the positive side, it's going to allow companies to form, reform, and become agile very quickly, because there won't be this molasses poured all over their machine that is their current information technology infrastructure. infrastructure.
Well, I was going to say, from my perspective, obviously in education, there's many potentially disruptive innovations occurring now, from MOOCs, the massive open online courses, and on and on and on. But I'd like to maybe step back from specific innovations to talk about what I hope more we see in more organizations is a better capability for sensing, scanning innovations, new technologies, new trends, and assessing where they are in their maturity, and when and how and if to adapt or adopt these technologies and trends into your organizations. And I don't see enough organizations doing this enterprise-wide. I see it happening in pockets in organizations, and universities are no exception. But when you're really looking at the impact on the entire enterprise, and this is, I think, a role I see leading EA groups play, and I wish I saw more EA groups playing this role, of really looking holistically across the enterprise and doing this continuous sensing and scanning and evaluation and coming up with the approach that the organization should take towards a particular trend or technology, and like as I said, if and when and how to adapt or adopt it. I'm not seeing that occur enterprise-wide as much as I'd like. I'm hoping that improves in the future, and I believe that the Enterprise Architecture Group is the most appropriate place to put a function like that. I also think a potentially positive innovation would be the continued evolution of EA outside of IT. We're starting to see a few leading organizations actually reposition EA under a business function like strategic planning or the COO or the chief transformation or the chief innovation officer. It really varies, but we're starting to see a few leading organizations do this. I think when that leap occurs, then I think you really open up the possibilities of EA across the enterprise, not just limited to the IT organization, and the scope needed to really do this type of enterprise-wide scanning and evaluation of potentially disruptive innovations.
So, Nick, what do you see or feel is your number one top area of controversy in any area or in EA? And then following Nick, if Brian, you can also give your viewpoints.
It's interesting to ask about controversy. As you know, Stephen, I spend a good bit of time on the community list at LinkedIn in the EA community, and the kind of discussions that go on there are at a fairly elementary level about what is enterprise architecture, things like what kind of problems can be solved by enterprise architecture. And is enterprise architecture really at the enterprise level, or is it more than IT? Things that they're fairly basic questions, yet the discussions can go on and on and on. What would an architecture-enabled enterprise look like is an interesting question, because it makes the assumption that most enterprises are not architecture-enabled, that they are somehow different. And it asks the question, is organic evolution of an enterprise architectural? So I think really from the perspective of where I sit, I live in the world of understanding how organizations grow and develop and how their structures and functions become more mature over time. And in that space, I think the biggest controversy today is really about understanding whether or not we can approach the development of an organization or an enterprise in a way that would allow it to become more efficient and effective without individuals, without a master god character sitting around going, oh no, this thing has to be there, but rather in a natural way, in a way that the organization would naturally evolve and develop. And I think we're seeing an emergence of ideas coming from multiple different places that are bringing some of those things together. We're seeing some things come from some older business development ideas, as well as some modern information oriented ideas, all starting to mix together to be able to answer the question, how should an organization grow? I think that's really the biggest challenge right now. And there's a huge, furious amount of discussion around that. Should it grow intentionally through an architecture? Should it grow through rules and organic development? how should it grow? And I think that's a fascinating part of the discussion I expect for the next few years.
And I think from my perspective, coming from higher education, and in particular enterprise architecture higher education, I think one of the big areas of controversy, as Nick alluded to, as we're seeing in industry, is, you know, what is enterprise architecture and what does an enterprise architecture curriculum look like? Now, as Nick mentioned, there's a lot of very forward-looking thinking that's going on about the role of enterprise architecture, et cetera. And that thinking also makes its way into our FIPO discussions and the FIPO career path effort, et cetera, with the broad international group that we have together. But the kind of pet peeve of mine that I see in higher education, if you see enterprise architecture at all, 9 times out of 10, it comes from a traditional computer science or engineering program, and it's really repackaged systems or software architecture. So people will hear comments, well, XYZ college or university has EA program, but really they've just done some repackaging and tweaking around. We brought together a large corporate and government advisory group at Penn State because there are no model curriculum out there to advise us on what should be in this program. We have over 70 organizations, you know, that have provided input and vetting. So with lack of a model curriculum, that's the next best thing. But I haven't seen anybody else doing anything like that. And I think that's probably one of the biggest areas of potential controversy right now in higher education, because you're starting to see more universities offer EA courses. But what's it mean to be an EA course? Is it enough to repackage your software engineering course and call it enterprise architecture? Hopefully over time, with FIPO, one of my personal goals is to start an academic arm of FIPO where we can develop model curricula with an international audience and put some more accreditation and consistency and some standards around what's done in higher education.
A couple of years ago, I attended a FIPO meeting, and you had a representative from the Department of Defense, I believe it was the CIO office, and the gentleman did a presentation indicating that the U.S. government was interested in developing some kind of a professionalism certification program for EA. And I believe the target date was something like 2014, 15, something like that. I mean, Brian, you were there. I mean, how do you see the evolution of EA then as a recognized profession on par with some of the other professions that are out there, you know, with things like demonstrated professional development, adherence to a code of ethics, personal responsibility, public accountability, quality assurance, recognized credentials, and especially in keeping in mind that there was sort of this interest of the U.S. government in looking at this. And then, Brian, after you give your views, if Nick can give his thought as a working practitioner out there.
Sure. And as you mentioned, there's tremendous interest in the professionalism of enterprise architecture, not just within the U.S. government, but around the globe, from governments and corporations and other organizations around the globe. I get inquiries almost every other week from all corners of the globe. I honestly think we've got a lot of work to do before we arrive at the stature of, quote, a real profession, as I said, on par with accounting, engineering, and other established professions. But I do believe the FIPO organization is a major step in that direction, because up until this time, we really didn't have a way of building consensus, as Nick mentioned. We had many different professional organizations that were focusing on their individual constituents, and one group would put out some standards or what have you, and then the other groups that weren't involved in that would take shots at those standards and come out with their own, and it was very fragmented, still is very fragmented, and in our opinion, coming from Penn State, and unless something was done to coalesce this profession, that evolution might be a long time in the making, or may never get here. And one of our goals is to advance the profession of enterprise architecture, our goals within FIPO and within our center at Penn State, and to help EA become, from the Penn State perspective, more of a mainstream academic discipline and not just this unique program that you see at Penn State. But we've got quite a bit of work to do. But as I said, I'm very optimistic because we have a unique set of organizations and a unique set of very gifted individuals that have come together through FIPO to really advance and professionalize the discipline. So I'm very optimistic that over the next several years you'll see some great work coming out of FIPO and much more maturity and professionalism for the discipline as a whole.
From a practitioner standpoint, the evolution of the profession has been currently it's discoordinated and sometimes well-meaning, other times maybe not so much. Our private interests have jumped into the gap, as is typical with any new area, and have provided a series of various different certifications. A few years ago, you simply couldn't get much of a certification in enterprise architecture that anybody would recognize. The problem now is that we have competing certifications, and they don't cover the same things. So there's sometimes certifications are internal to an organization, quite frequently for very large organizations they are. In addition, there are certifications offered through a number of different providers. And the providers are, for the most part, commercial interests. And so we get a wide array of different ideas. And while those ideas have become better, there's also a certain sense of reluctance for any organization once they put out a certification. It's one of the reasons why FIPO doesn't provide certifications. There's a certain reluctance that once you've got a group of people who are certified, you know, version 4 of our certification standard, that you don't want to create a version 5 that's too radically different from it. And as a result, new ideas don't creep in very quickly because there's this impedance caused by the existence of a certification program that didn't use that new idea, and now you have to go tell all these people, oh, in order to remain certified, you have to add a new idea to your repertoire. Companies invest great deals of money sometimes getting everybody in an organization certified at, on framework X or methodology Y. And, the professionals kind of stuck in the middle. We're kind of windswept back and forth between the winds of change and the ideas of what might constitute a good profession. Frequently there's, these things are not even coordinated at the organizational level. The organization would say, go get certified and won't tell you what. I won't tell you which one matters. And so you're kind of at the mercy of good marketing, which is a terrible thing to put the mercy of. So I think right now we haven't seen the forward momentum that I'm hoping to see in building a real profession, at least in terms of the way the rest of the world sees it, which is why I'm so focused on being part of FIPO, because I think this is the necessary prerequisite that can allow us to get there, is by having an organization like FIPO, and that's the reason why I'm focused so much on FIPO, to pull together all the various different voices, or at least enough of those voices to have the weight and say, guys, I know that those guys over there are providing a certification, but if we've certified it, then we can tell you that it's a really good one. And you can look for that mark, that seal of approval that says the certification really does fulfill a need, and here's what that need is, and here's how it works with other needs and even with other certifications.
Well, we're down to our last couple of questions, and the first one is sort of optional in the sense that, Nick, do you have one sort of interesting story you want to share? And the same also applies to Brian.
I hadn't really thought out in advance for an interesting story to share. I would say that I've been working with an organization that is very interested in improving safety within their manufacturing, and they do highly complex manufacturing in a very dangerous environment. And in order to improve safety in that situation, there's so many factors and so many variables to include. And traditionally, the organization took an either-or approach. Either will fix the processes and will make processes more safe. They actually have a whole segment of their organization focused on what they're calling process safety. Or they'll focus on information technology. How do we provide the information so that people can make better decisions about safety? And as I've sat down and worked with them, they've begun to really understand that it's not an either-or approach. You really have to have both. You really have to understand that processes and information working together can provide safety where one or the other simply can't. And that slow evolution has been, it's been fascinating to watch as people realize their teams, their structures, their assumptions are called into challenge. How do you reassume your initiatives halfway through? And it makes for some fun discussion.
I think for my interesting, or I would say somewhat funny story that I'll share, as you mentioned, Stephen, I do quite a bit of traveling. And this past spring, in a two-week period, I was in Kazakhstan, Mexico, and Taiwan. And I have a young child who likes to watch the cartoon SpongeBob SquarePants. And I think this shows what a global community we live in. In Kazakhstan, I saw SpongeBob in Russian when I turned on the TV. I go to Mexico City, I see it in Spanish. I go to Taipei, and I see it in Chinese. And I think the message here, also for enterprise architecture, is that when I go around the world, I hear many of the same issues, concerns, challenges, and also great interest in this field. And I think the challenges and issues and interest in the field, it's all over the globe. As I mentioned, Kazakhstan, part of the former Soviet Republic, a lot of interest in enterprise architecture. So it's truly a global topic and a global area of interest.
Yeah, I'm sure from your travels, you've got other stories you can't share.
or stories that you might not want to know about. As you know, I picked up a few stomach viruses along the way. So, yes, I've got a few stories.
Now we're down to our last question, and this is where I turn the tables, where if you were conducting this interview, what, let's say, one question would you have asked, and then what would you be your answer? Now, we'll start with Nick, and then followed by Brian.
So I think the the question that I would have asked is one I wouldn't be able to answer. I'm really glad you didn't ask it. Which is what is the actual next topic to go after consensus for? And I think one of the challenges with any consensus-based approach is you have to get consensus on the topic first. So we're in the process of storming that out. And we will, while we have a perspective paper that talks about what is enterprise architecture and what it can do for you in various different situations, we don't have a specific topic picked out for the next paper. And that's the one we're going to be working on over the course of the next couple of weeks.
And from my perspective, I thought you did an excellent job formulating the question, so I don't know that I necessarily have anything that I feel should have been asked, but perhaps as we look at leading organizations that have evolved from their roots in IT and now have moved out of IT under some business function, you know, are we seeing any lessons there that others can learn from? And within the Center for EA at Penn State, we're just starting to uncover these organizations and get permission to come in and study how they made this transition. But one observation that I see with all that I've talked to, and I've only talked to a handful so far, and there may only be a handful out there at this point in time, for that matter. But what's interesting is that they've all, in one form or another, have abandoned the traditional IT-based EA frameworks and methodologies, and have evolved something in conjunction with strategic planning or their business partners that truly works for the entire organization. It may have elements of some of the traditional EA frameworks and methodologies, but they've transitioned beyond those. And I think that's a lesson that our industry needs to hear. As Nick mentioned, we kind of get married and stagnant in some ways in our current thinking and frameworks, et cetera, and that the evolution really isn't an evolution, but just kind of tweaking around the edges. But really, if we want to make this jump outside of IT, we've got to broaden the thinking around our models beyond an IT-centric perspective. So that means we need to get people from outside of EA and IT involved in the discussion. I'll go to some of these different conferences where they're having different working groups, and I'll ask, well, where are the strategic planning people? We all want to be strategic. We're developing tools and models here. Where are the business people? Where are the strategic planning groups and strategic planning people? They should be part of this. If you want to get them to use it, you need to have their perspective, and you need to, get them to be part of the dialogue. And right now, by and large, they're not there, and they need to be. And that's something we hope to address with FIPO over time as we continue to evolve and expand our reach and membership as well.
Well, that completes the interview. So I really do appreciate you, Brian and Nick, coming in today, to do this interview. I know that both of you are extremely busy, so it's very fortunate to have you share your insights with the audience. So again, thank you so much. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Brian Cameron, founding president of FIPO, and Nick Malik, principal Microsoft Enterprise Architect.